Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Child Protection in Sport Unit. We're part of the NSPCC and funded by UK Sports Councils. Our work supports organisations to safeguard all children taking part in sport.
Welcome to part four of our online safety mini-series. Did you know that 1 in 10 children aged 13 to 15 have received a sexual message in the past year? In 2023-2024, there were almost 2,900 childline counselling sessions about online harm, online safety, or online sexual abuse and exploitation. And according to the latest research from Loughborough University and the CPSU, 33% of cases reported to NGBs in the last 12 months have involved online activity. In this episode, we're going to be introducing you to the harm reduction principle and how it relates to the online world. We will then be following this up with an episode that looks very specifically at how you can use the harm reduction principle for online safety within the sports and physical activity sector. But for now, let's get into it. Hi everyone, I'm Samantha Lawrence. I'm the Senior Digital Content Editor at the CPSU. And today I'm joined by Louisa Street, who I actually met first when I was working for Active Cornwall in the Active Partnership. So hi Louisa, thanks for joining me today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Louisa, you've got lots of experience as a youth worker in digital resilience, sexual health, drugs and alcohol. But I've asked you today to talk a little bit about digital resilience, online safety and the harm reduction principle. Can you tell me a bit more about yourself first?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, I've been a youth worker. I always say if you cut me down the middle like a stick of rock, it would say youth worker in the middle. That's kind of the important part to me of who I am. I've worked with young people around a range of issues. And the most recent project that I've worked on is all about young people's digital resilience, which actually has then led me to go and do a PhD looking at young people's views on the law around sexual image sharing, aka sexting, just coming up to the halfway point of that, an academic in training, but a youth worker at heart.
Brilliant. Thank you. I attended a conference recently at which you were presenting, and you were talking about something called a prohibition approach. So can you tell me a bit more about what a prohibition approach to online safety is and why it doesn't work?
Yes. Okay, so prohibition is exactly what it sounds like. It's about saying to young people, don't do this, it's bad, it's illegal, it's risky, and we don't want you to do it because we don't want you to face these risks and the potential harm that you might experience as a result. Now, typically outside of the digital world, we don't use that kind of prohibition scare tactics approach. And a really good example of this is sex education. So when we first started doing sex education with young people, you know, in schools, a lot of the approach was you wait until you get married. It was all abstinence-based. And what people found when they started researching how effective that was is that it doesn't work. It doesn't stop young people having sex before marriage. It actually stops them using contraception, and that leads to more STIs and unwanted pregnancies. And so it kind of has this unintended outcome, because saying to young people, don't do this, kind of makes it seem really exciting, and that makes them really want to do it. And we've kind of got decades of evidence that shows prohibition doesn't work. The other issue with prohibition approaches is that it tends to make young people more vulnerable. So when we think about the reason that we're trying to stop young people doing stuff is because we don't want them to be vulnerable. But by not giving them a safe place to talk about issues they might experience, it can make them more vulnerable. And that's as true in the online world as it is in the offline world. And yet in the online world, we'll quite often say to young people, oh, just don't go on that. Don't go to that website. Don't play that game. Don't go on that app. Don't talk to that person. And so we take this quite strict prohibition approach, where in other areas, we would tend to give more of a sort of what I will explain as a harm reduction approach.
That reminds me of being a teenager myself. And every time my parents would tell me not to do something, there was a little voice inside my head that would go, Why not? Okay, yeah. What would happen if I did? But it sounds like it's quite common for young people to want to take risks and to explore the world around them, and just telling them no doesn't seem like it works. So what is a harm reduction approach?
So the harm reduction approach, we've kind of developed it at the Head Start Kernow Digital Resilience Project. We've adapted the principles of harm reduction to be relevant to the online world. So the principles of harm reduction were developed for use with people who use drugs. But as I talk through them, hopefully it'll kind of make sense that it does really apply to the digital world as well. So I'll talk through each of the, I think there's 8 principles, and kind of give some examples of how that would apply to the digital world. So the first thing is we have to accept that this is happening. I talk to people a lot who are like, oh, I just wish that young people didn't have to grow up with all of this like social media stress and, you know, all of the like toxic stuff of your friends messaging you all the time and expecting a response. I wish they didn't have to do that. You know, that's understandable, but this is the world we live in right now, and we need to accept that this is the world that young people are growing up in. So that's kind of the first one. The next one is that we have to understand that it's complex. Young people's interactions with the digital world are really complex. And I'll use an example around sexual image sharing. When we talk about sexual image sharing, we often say to young people, oh, you might get pressured to send images. This is how to resist that pressure. When a young person then decides that they want to send an image, they're going to think, well, all of that stuff about resisting pressure isn't relevant anymore because I want to do this. So we need to make sure that when we're talking to young people about the digital world, we're not just trying to make it into one thing that they need to know in order to stay safe. We need to kind of recognize there's lots of different things that are going on. Understanding that kind of complexity and talking to young people about all of that. The next one is that abstinence may not be the best outcome. But when we think about the sort of addictions that young people might be said to have around the digital world, like, oh, my child's addicted to their phone, or this child that I'm supporting is addicted to gaming, saying, well, they now have to stop doing it altogether, is probably not going to be successful, and is probably not necessary either. So sometimes we need to be able to just put boundaries around the digital world. And sometimes we need to say, actually, in this case, abstinence is going to be the best outcome. There's some stuff, like if a young person was accessing illegal pornography, then we would say, actually, this is not something that we can encourage them to do less. The next three actually are all kind of interconnected. And that is, we need to have a non-judgmental response, give young people a voice, and see them as the primary agents of change. And this is all about how we respond if a young person comes to us and says they're having an issue online. I know from working with young people that you can spend weeks and weeks and weeks explaining to a young person why they shouldn't do something, and then they'll come to you and say, oh, I did that thing after all. And it's very difficult not to roll your eyes and say, why? I told you not to do that. But we need to try really hard to kind of say, okay, well, it's the reason that they've come to me is because they feel like they can talk to me about this. So trying to kind of maintain that non-judgmental space to say, okay, what do we have to do now? Giving them a voice is about recognizing that while sometimes we might have to do things that the young person might not agree with, we need to listen to what their concerns are within that. So if you've ever had to say to a young person, like, I'm really worried about you and I'm going to have to tell someone what you've told me, you've probably experienced that moment where they're like, no, please don't do that. This isn't to say, oh, well, I'm going to give them a voice and so I won't tell that person. But it's about saying, okay, I can see that's really worrying you. Is there anyone in particular that it would be better not to talk to? So, for example, if they've got a form tutor at school who they really don't get on with, but there's another teacher that they really do get on with, it might be about saying, okay, well, I'll talk to that teacher first so that they're not kind of put in that position of someone that they don't trust being in charge of making the decisions about what happens next. And equally, we might say, right, well, the rules from now on are you're not allowed to have your phone apart from for half an hour a day. If the young person doesn't agree with that, they're going to find a way around that rule. And that's because they are the people who can make those changes. So we need to recognize that getting them on board with the changes that we want to see is really important. And then the last two are really just about being prepared, I guess, for the issues that young people might come to you with. Firstly, inequality affects vulnerability. So again, using the example of sexual image sharing, people with disabilities, people from racialized backgrounds, and people from the LGBTQ plus community are more likely to have their intimate images non-consensually shared than other people. And I think the important thing about that is, you know, when we think about young people having their sexual images non-consensually shared, our image of who a victim is might be, you know, the young white girl. And actually, it might be that somebody else who we might not think of is much more vulnerable to images being non-consensually shared. So just being aware of that and challenging our own prejudices and stereotypes and kind of being prepared to see all young people as young people. And then the last one is about not minimizing the harm. So harm reduction isn't about saying everything's great, the digital world is fine, there's no problems, but about recognizing that actually, yeah, when a young person has experienced harm, we need to respond to it and we need to recognize that that harm is real, even if it's stuff that we might not always recognize as being really harmful, but kind of listening to them and hearing their experience, I guess, is really important with that.
Thank you. That's a lot. That is a lot. But I think when you were talking, I was thinking about, so I have a 4-year-old son, and I was thinking every time he does something I don't agree with or something that isn't necessarily safe that I don't want him to do, it's really useless of me if the first thing I do when he comes to me is to tell him off because he's less likely to come to me in the future. And it's that kind of, what can I do to put in place to make sure that he's as safe as possible in that environment? So if I don't want him to jump off something really, really high, well, actually, he's going to do it anyway. So I need to put a crash mat down, or I need to teach him how to jump safely.
Absolutely. And it's interesting you say that, because I've always been, you know, someone who worked with teenagers, don't have any experience of working with younger children. So I think, oh God, I don't know how you would do harm reduction with someone that little. But like, so I guess different perspectives. But you're right, that is a lot to take in. At the Head Start Digital Resilience Project, we've got a podcast, and we've done 5 or 6 different podcasts exploring the harm reduction approach in different contexts. So we've done one about gaming, we've done one about sexual image sharing. So if people want to kind of explore it in more detail, they can check out our podcast.
Brilliant, thank you. So thinking about all the experience you have talking to young people, what is it they're actually telling you they're most concerned about when it comes to the online world?
That's a really good question. Often when we talk about issues in the digital world, the sort of headline things are, oh, we're worried about young people watching pornography, we're worried about young people playing violent video games, and we're worried about young people spending too much time on Instagram, and, you know, the body image impacts that that can have. And whilst those things are definitely issues, when we talk to young people, that isn't what they actually raise as their major concerns. Most of the time, if I've spoken to young people and said, what do you see online that you find upsetting? It's often the news, particularly, you know, throughout COVID, the news was very upsetting. There's since then been a lot of news about war, terrorism, politics, climate change. Yeah. And that's, young people are consuming that online. And that's actually often what they say is like the first thing that they find really upsetting. So
that's actually really interesting, because you see a lot of headlines saying children shouldn't have access to social media, you know, we should raise the age limit, but you're not going to stop a 15-year-old consuming the news. I suppose you also can't stop cyberbullying necessarily. If people have phones, they have access to being able to send horrible messages to people. Yeah. whether that's through social media or another mean, they will find a way to do it. So a lot of our listeners work in the sport and physical activity world, and we are going to be doing a follow-up podcast episode specifically looking at how we can use the harm reduction principle within that sector. But for now, what is it that adults can do if they are working in a sports club or an activity provision in the local community, if a child or young person comes to them with a concern that is related to online safety?
Do you know, when we've spoken to young people on Digital Resilience Project, the consistent thing that they have asked adults to do is listen and not judge. Just listen to what they've got to say. Don't be judgmental. You don't have to have all the answers, but often saying to the young person, what do you want to happen? Like, you've told me about this, and that suggests that you're really worried about it. what would you like to happen next? Do you want this person to be spoken to? Do you want, you know, one of the things I often say to young people is it's useful to say to adults, if you don't want to work with that person anymore, if you don't want to be paired up with that person, if you don't want to be in a team with that person who's maybe being mean to you or bullying you online, offline, you know, wherever that may be happening, because that's something that adults can action. Again, kind of saying like, okay, you're worried about this person, you know, maybe it's not an issue of like, oh, we need to go to the police about it, but something needs to happen, and asking them like, what do you want to happen? How do you want us to respond to this? And, you know, I think the other thing, we can put in these age restrictions on different things, but ultimately young people will then get to those ages and we need to be giving them advice about what to do now and what to do when they reach the age that they'll be legally allowed to do these things, and just try and think like, what advice do they need? What information do they need? Can I listen without panicking, basically?
Yeah, listen without judgment and listen without panicking.
Yeah.
I like that. Probably harder sometimes to do than it is 100%, to,
yeah.
to say. But I suppose the more you practice it, the better at it you will become. Brilliant. Thank you. For some of our listeners, the CPSU does have some content on online safety on its website. There's also some really useful resources and training on NSPCC learning, which we'll provide the links down below. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Louisa.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Child Protection in Sport Unit podcast. If you're looking for more information and resources on safeguarding children in sport, please visit our website at thecpsu.org.uk.